Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Cricket. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and on my left for today's special episode of TCCP is none other than promising Derbyshire wicketkeeper batsman, Brooke Guest. So Brooke, first things first, mate, thank you very much for joining me here on the podcast today. It's an absolute pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. I have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Obviously, we've had a big first month of the season, so we've got a few days off this week, so it'll be nice to have a bit of rest and recovery.
It most certainly will. Yeah, the county grind, definitely well and truly underway. In 2022, we got the Blast this month as well, of course, the Royal London One Day Cup later on in the summer. It's been a hectic first month, and actually, Brooke, before we get into the main content of today's podcast, we have to talk about the elephant in the room, which was your performance over this past weekend. You were quite superb for Derbyshire in that thrilling match against Glamorgan at the Ancora Ground. In terms of your performances, first and foremost, how impressed and how pleased are you with those batting performances over the weekend?
Yeah, obviously it's a great personal game for myself. And like you say, it was a great game in the end. Obviously it's been a long winter hours that we put in the indoor school, and that the performances like this make it all worth it, and make it even more special that I've done it batting at number three, which is a position that I've wanted to bat, and had conversations with Mickey over the winter about it when eventually he got here, and to have conversations with him about wanting to make that position my own. Performances like this sort of, they really put it out there and go, That's why I want to be there, and that's why I want to make it my own position.
Absolutely. And to be honest, Brooke, you did exactly that. Over the weekend, scores of 109 from 251 deliveries and 138, a career best score in the first class format from 242 balls. Just the 20 boundaries struck across those two innings, including two sixes as well. And a great piece of trivia for the cricket badgers out there listening to today's podcast. The first Derbyshire wicketkeeper since Bill Storer in 1896 to score centuries in both innings of the same county championship match. So, Brooke, I'm guessing absolutely elated with those performances. Of course, we'll touch upon Derbyshire in a lot more detail as today's podcast progresses. But before we jump the gun and we talk too much about county cricket, because that will, of course, be a main segment of today's conversation, I just want to transport you all the way back to the origins of the Brooke Guest cricketing journey, if I may. Because Brooke, I'm very interested actually to find out what the first interactions that you had with the game actually were. So what were your first ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this sensational game?
Well, I was, as a young kid, I was a terrible watcher of cricket. I couldn't watch cricket until I probably got to about 14, 15 was when I started to start watching cricket properly. So it was more playing the game in the back garden with my brother and my dad. Obviously, when I was probably about 4, 5, 6 was probably when I started playing in the back garden with my brother and my dad. Before we moved over to Australia when I was 7, and we started playing a bit of club cricket over there, myself and my brother. So I played up a couple of age groups to play alongside him. And yeah, that was my first team environment in cricket. Yeah. Willerton Cricket Club. So that was probably 16 years ago, I'd say. Seems a while ago.
Yeah, time flies, doesn't it, to be honest, when you're having fun in this wonderful game. And you mentioned there about being born in England, making the move to Australia at an early age. I think you know the exact question, which is about to crop out of my mouth in the next few seconds. But when the Ashes come along, Brooke, who do you support?
England all the way. I've always been an England fan. Even when we moved over there, I was born in England, so I'm English. That's always been my team, England.
Top man. I was going to say, Brooke, this interview could have been cut very short then if you would have said you're supporting Australia. But In terms of those most formative years in the game of cricket, aside from your family then, I'm guessing has a tremendous influence on those first tentative steps into the game itself. In terms of the professional game, did you have any icons, any influences, any role models that you tried to implement your game around in those most formative of years, per se?
Yeah, obviously it's an Australian player, but obviously I still support England. But Ricky Ponting was sort of my cricket idol, as you could say, growing up. Obviously batted in that number three position, and being over in Australia, I saw a lot more of him and his style of play, batting at number three, but could take on the bowlers at the same time. And also Matt Prior, obviously from the keeping background, he was obviously the England keeper when I started getting it really into cricket, and that and watching him obviously keep and bat how he did, that sort of got me into the passion for keeping as well. So those two, I'd say, growing up, were my two cricket idols.
Well, two very nice choices. It has to be said, Ricky Ponting, just the second all-time leading run scorer in Test match cricket. And Matt Prior, obviously one of England's greatest ever wicketkeepers, was an absolute magician behind the stumps, to say the very least. And let's say that you've got Ricky Ponting and Matt Prior. Let's say they're available for a net session, Brooke, 2 hour long, right? Who do you prefer to have a net session with and why?
It's a tough question, that. I'd probably say Ricky Ponting, just in the way that, like I said before, just the way he went about his batting in, and just the way watching him, how he knew his game, and he could always get on top of bowlers in situations and never fully let bowlers settle into games. Obviously, as every batsman does, he went through highs and lows in his career, but when he was in top form, not many bowlers could bowl at him. And just being able to learn off him on how he sort of structured his innings and went through the tempos of when he was going at bowlers and when he knew that he had to dig in for a bit, and that, I think that would be really, really nice to have a, like you say, 2 hours with him, whether it was just a conversation or even a net session.
I feel like that's quite the wise choice. And yeah, 2 hours, imagine how much you could pick up from the great man himself. Who knows, Brooke, you know, if you have a strong T20 blast, IPL contract next season at the Delhi Capitals, could be more than net sessions. Who knows? Could be your head coach. Who knows in the game of cricket? It's a funny old game, isn't it? But Ricky Ponting and Matt Prior aside then, and international cricket aside really in those early years, let's talk about county cricket, Brooke, if I may, because I'm guessing from those early days, there weren't many interactions with county cricket then, if you were based in Australia. How did those first links with the county circuits come about in the first place?
So I originally came over when I was 18 just to play a bit of club cricket at Sale Cricket Club up in Manchester. And the chairman of the club at the time went to school with Mark Chilton, who was the second team coach at Lancashire / batting coach. And I'd started the season quite well with Sale, and the two of them had got in contact and obviously knew that I had a British passport, obviously being born over here. And they invited me down for a trial day with the second 11. And from there, I ended up playing a few second team games and started off all right with them. And that was sort of how I got introduced into it, as an 18, 19-year-old playing second-team cricket at Lancashire. And then sort of the back half of the season, I got offered a six-month contract for the next year. And, yeah, I haven't really looked back since.
Well, you most certainly haven't. And I'm guessing that would have been incredibly proud for you as well, considering that that is the county of your birth as well. Of course, any of the 18 first-class counties, it's a tremendous privilege to represent any of them. But in particular for you, as someone born in Manchester, you mentioned there about representing Sale Cricket Club as well. That must have been quite special to be given that opportunity?
Yeah, it definitely was. And it was quite a tough choice because at the time I was obviously in the academy with Western Australia. So it was quite a tough choice. Do I sign a 6-month contract over here and pull out of the academy in Western Australia, or do I go back there and continue in the academy and miss out on a contract? So it was a tough choice in the end, but I think I made the right decision as to where I am now. And like you say, you have tough decisions in life, and this one, so far it's paid off, shall we say.
It most certainly has, Brooke. And now look where it's taken you. You're on the Cairns Cricket Podcast as opposed to the Sheffield Shield Podcast. So again, it's funny how how life works out, to be honest. And from those humble beginnings in the county circuit, in 2018, you made your debut for your boyhood club, Lancashire versus Hampshire, in the 2018 County Championship down at the Aegeus Bowl, which the Red Rose actually went on to win this game by 8 wickets. Before we talk about the game itself, the performance and the on-field nerves, how did you first find out that you were going to be making your debut on that day?
It was a few days before, just before we were setting off down to Hampshire, that obviously Glenn Chappell came up to me and told me that I was going to play, was going to bat at 3, obviously where I'd hoped to bat. And I don't think it didn't really set in until the morning of the game. Obviously I knew in the back of my head that I was playing in that, but until that morning I was a bit, didn't think it was real. Until I got there that morning and went, wow, it's happening. This is what all these years from when the age of 4, 5, 6, when I first picked up a cricket bat to now all them balls that I've hit and all that practice that I've done has all paid off to get me here. So it was a bit of a surreal moment.
I can imagine it would have been, and be honest here, Brooke, in terms of the day itself, were the nerves jangling?
Oh yeah. It was a blur. The whole game itself was a blur. It was a bit, like I say, it was surreal. It was like, I almost couldn't believe that it was happening at the time. And obviously it wasn't my best game personally. I didn't get too many runs. But to have that moment of playing first-class cricket and breaking into that first team after a good season with the second team, it was just one of them special moments that you'll always remember.
Absolutely. And rightfully so as well, playing for a massive county like Lancs. It does not get much better than that, to be honest, Brooke. And you mentioned about the performances. Do you remember your exact scores from those few days down on the South Coast?
I got teens in the first innings and then I got a first bowler in the second innings. Two decent bowlers.
Yeah, you're right about the second innings. Golden Duck by, do you remember the bowler?
Yeah, Golden Duck in the second innings was Fidel Edwards.
Correct, yeah. Not to be fair, there's no shame in getting out to Fidel, a fantastic bowler, to say the least, and then 8 from 28 balls in the first innings. Do you remember the bowler?
Kyle Abbott in the first innings.
I mean, that must have been a bit of a baptism of fire, to be fair. When you think about your journey from going from the Western Australia Academy, trying to get Lancs, getting into that second 11, and then all of a sudden you're down at the Aegeus Bowl on a seam-friendly wicket against Abbott and Fidel Edwards. There's no shame in that at all, to be honest, Brooke. And I'm guessing even to this day, a tremendously special occasion. Were your family able to travel down for that, or did they watch it?
No. Unfortunately, obviously, my parents still live over in Australia. So my parents and my brother still live over in Perth. So unfortunately, they couldn't get over for it. But I'm sure Dad would have been up watching it ball by ball to see when I got in and tried to live every memory with me from the other side of a screen.
Well, that's nice. Again, shows a very supportive family unit, to say the least, with your family back in Australia. I bet that must be a bit of a pain at times, though, in terms of the time zone difference, mustn't it? Yeah. Especially with the live streams. They must be starting at ungodly hours out in Perth.
Yeah, definitely. Dad's a big cricket supporter, and obviously coached me through a lot of junior age group stuff at my cricket clubs. So he's lived that full journey with me, and obviously my mum was a big cricket watcher. So they both, I'm sure, have watched a fair bit of my cricket at stupid hours, should we say, over in Australia. But yeah, they've been a massive support to me throughout my whole cricket journey up till now. And I couldn't thank them enough.
Well, that is absolutely lovely to hear, Brooke. And if you don't mind me asking, what are their names so we can give them a bit of a shout out here on the podcast?
David and Kay.
David and Kay. Big up to David and Kay Guest, because here we go. All the hard work has definitely paid off. And it did with that debut as well. A monumental moment to make your first class debut for such an illustrious and storied cricketing organisation. And Brooke, in terms of your time at Lancs, if we're looking retrospectively now, what do you say was your highlights from your time with the Red Rose? Is there any particular moment, any particular game, any particular knock which stands out above all others?
Obviously, I didn't play an awful lot in the first team there, but obviously my two first-class games that I'd played there were obviously quite special to me. Obviously, playing at the Aegeus Bowl, making my debut there, and then the following season playing at Lord's is obviously the home of cricket. It's a pretty special ground. It's got a lot of history behind it. And seeing, obviously, a lot of test matches played there on TV, and to actually be there and out there playing yourself was a very special moment. Obviously, in either of them games, I didn't get as many runs as I would like to. But I'd say those two games were my highlights of my time there.
Fair enough, Brooke. I mean, the fact is, even though you didn't get many opportunities in the first 11, you've got that for life. You've played for Lancashire County Cricket Club. You know, there's thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people who've wanted to live that dream and unfortunately never been able to fulfill it, really. So should be immensely proud, to say the least. But I suppose on the flip side of that, because as we all know, cricket isn't just a game of highs. It's a roller coaster. It's a wave. It fluctuates. You have peaks, troughs, highs and lows. What do you say was your toughest moment from your time with the Red Rose? Was it that lack of opportunity? Was it something else? Why do you think things didn't quite necessarily pan out the way that you would have hoped with the Northern County?
Yeah, I think, like you say, the lack of opportunity. Obviously, they've got a very strong squad, and did when I was playing there, and still do now. So obviously not getting that opportunity obviously can get frustrating at times, especially when you're doing well in the twos. But at the same time, when blokes are doing well in the first team as well, they're not going to drop out because you're doing well in the twos. So I understood, and obviously understood why it was happening and what was going on. But obviously having that frustration of when you feel like you're ready to go and take that next leap to play in first class cricket and getting a bit of a run at it, obviously that didn't happen for me at Lancs. So that would probably be my, obviously not lowest moment, because I obviously enjoyed a lot my time there and have a lot of good memories from playing a lot of cricket in the twos there. But that lack of opportunity was obviously the disappointment in a way of being such a big club.
Well, that's understandable, to be honest. But as you mentioned, the competition up in Lancashire is absolutely cutthroat, isn't it? There's so many talented players, even in the academy now, who aren't even getting a go in first team cricket because it's a tremendously successful club. It's as simple as that. It's an international quality venue that they've got at their disposal with Old Trafford. You've got England players in there. You've got some consummate county professionals as well. A very, very tough starting 11 to break into, to say the least. But the wonderful thing about life is when opportunities don't present themselves in one place, they can in another place. And this other place in this scenario just happens to be a little bit further down south in the country, in Derbyshire. So, Brooke, in terms of that initial move, how did the transfer to Derbyshire County Cricket Club actually materialise in the first place?
Yes, obviously it was 2020, obviously the COVID hit year, when obviously clubs were a bit short on money and things were going on. Unfortunately, I'd got a call just before we'd gone back into training that year, after obviously the lockdowns, from Paul Allott, who was obviously the director of cricket at the time, saying basically we're unsure on where we are at the minute in terms of contracts for next year. We hope at some point we may be able to offer you a contract before next year, but we want to give you the opportunity to look elsewhere just in case there isn't that opportunity here. So I'd spoke with my agent after that call, obviously a bit down and disappointed, thinking, what if this is the end? And we had a few counties on the phone in the next couple of weeks, interested in signing for the next year or so. And obviously Derbyshire was quite appealing to me, in terms of obviously being a slightly smaller squad, and potentially allowing for more opportunities to play first team cricket and kind of get my name out there and hopefully play a fair bit of first class cricket and kind of prove to myself, as much as coaches and other people, that I was good enough for it and ready. So that was the appeal of Derbyshire. And obviously after a couple of weeks of thinking, myself and my agent, we went with the Derbyshire contract that they put on the table. And obviously looking forward to now, it's could say it's been the right move for me.
I would say it has, to be honest, Brooke. And we will actually pick up the conversation about Derbyshire in a minute, because it's been quite the memorable time at the East Midlands County since that initial move. But I just wanted to pick up the dialogue there about the contract situation at that time, because in a normal year, that would have been unsettling enough as it is, to be honest. But in 2020, in the COVID year, with so much uncertainty surrounding not just cricket, but of course the world at that time, that must have been incredibly difficult to deal with. So how did you actually deal with that pressure, I suppose, the fact that the dream almost came crumbling down in that moment? And just for those out there who don't quite know what the experience is like, how would you summarise the thoughts, the feelings, the emotions that come with being out of contracts as a professional cricketer?
Yeah, like you say, it was disappointing. Obviously, I'd gone into the last year of my contract, and it was frustrating because I couldn't. There was no cricket for the first half of the season, no second team, no training, no nothing. So it was frustrating that I couldn't go out there and sort of prove my worth and why I deserved another contract. And it was, yeah, a little bit heartbreaking in a way that I understood why it was happening, but it was heartbreaking the fact that I couldn't do it. I couldn't do anything about it at the time because there was nowhere to prove myself. But obviously after a few chats with obviously parents and obviously my agent, talking about it, how it can open other opportunities, and it's not necessarily the end of, there's other things in life and other opportunities arise, and obviously I'm forever thankful for the time that I spent at Lancashire and thankful obviously to Dave Houghton, obviously at the time who was director of cricket here at Derbyshire, for giving me that opportunity to come here and to prove myself that I'm good enough to play first class cricket and play in the first team of a county, and not just play but do well.
To be honest, Brooke, that's certainly happened, hasn't it, in the years that have followed?
Yeah, definitely. It's been, and like I say, at the time, it's a frustrating thing, but like obviously my parents and my agent had said, there's going to be more opportunities, and like you say, the opportunities arose, and you could say that I've taken them so far, and hopefully it's a start obviously this week's been a great week for me, and hopefully it's the start of a big season for me.
Absolutely. Fingers crossed, Brooke, that it will be. And the Derbyshire fans out there as well will sincerely be hoping so as well. But you mentioned Derbyshire and the initial move, actually. We always ask this about players when they do make that transfer from any county club. What were your initial impressions of Derbyshire as a county? What did you make of the place in terms of Derby, in terms of the Ancora ground, and of course the staff, the fans, the stakeholders of the club? What did you make of Derbyshire County Cricket Club as an organisation in those most formative of steps, I suppose?
Well, I obviously I didn't get to see, when I'd first signed, I didn't get to see the Ancora ground for 6-7 months before I got back there. Obviously, I joined at the end of the 2020 season on loan. And obviously, at that time, the Ancora ground was being used as a hub for international teams to train at when they first got here, obviously with the hotel just across the road. And we weren't allowed in the ground at all. We were training out at Repton. So at first I didn't get to go to my new home club, my new home ground, should I say. So it was an interesting start to my time. But yeah, the first memory I had was going into the change rooms, and I'd played against a few of the lads in twos cricket, and they were all so welcoming and made me feel welcome from the moment I walked in the door. And every credit to Dave Houghton and Billy Godelman, who sort of created that environment in the change room, that everyone was made to feel welcome, whether you were a young lad that had come through the academy or someone that was an overseas player or just a normal player that had come into the change room. They were a really welcoming club and group of lads. And yeah, like I say, we were made to feel welcome from that first moment. And even within my first couple of days, the CEO of the club, Ryan Duckett, was down at training and introducing himself. And so it gives you that real family environment that made everyone feel welcome. So my first impression was very good, and felt like from that first day, I'd made the right choice.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic to hear, to be honest, Brooke. And I know that'll bring a great smile to the Derbyshire faithful tuning in to today's episode. I always say this about Derbyshire as a club. It is like a family, isn't it? It's very tight-knit, very community-based, very community-driven. And again, it's just a lovely place to play your cricket, I suppose. And especially now with Mickey Arthur, who we'll touch upon in a lot more detail as the podcast progresses. There really is this renewed sense of hope and optimism about the club, and especially in a time where people, and some rather prominent people, as we said, are questioning the future of clubs like Derbyshire. It is good to see this positivity surrounding the club at the moment. And of course, it's been an absolutely fantastic start to the summer of 2022. But in terms of your time at Derbyshire so far, Brooke, this actually might be quite a tough question, given the events of this weekend. But what do you say has been your highlight from your time with East Midlands County to date?
Obviously, last year playing against Leicester at home, I made my maiden century. So that was obviously a very, very special moment for me. And then obviously this game as well, obviously scoring my second and third first class hundreds was quite special. I think those two games for me stand out on a personal level. Obviously last year we didn't have the best of seasons in terms of team results. But obviously having that start to this year where we've won one game and drawn three games, starting the season unbeaten after the first four games, gives us that real belief that we're a team to be reckoned with this year and put ourselves out there. So I think definitely those two moments, those two games, have been my highlights. And it's very promising for this year with how we started the season. So yeah, I think we're up for a promising season.
Well, fingers crossed. We sincerely hope so, because you mentioned 2021, a tremendously difficult year for the club with all the injuries. It was just one after the other after the other. It was absolutely rotten luck that was afflicting the club in last year across all three competitions, to be honest. But yeah, 2022, with Mickey Arthur at the helm, you brought in the likes of Shan Masood, Saranga Lakmal as well. The team has really gelled effectively so far. Hopefully this is the start of a very, very promising summer at the Ancora Grounds indeed. And actually, Brooke, talking of the summer of 2022, what a fantastic transition that is into today's Twitter questions, because the first of our questions for today is from Mickleover Cricket Club. And they are talking about a certain Mickey Arthur, the man with the infamous short shorts, a guy who has come into Derbyshire, injected that sense of optimism, hope, enthusiasm around the camp. And Mickleover CC's question for you, Brooke, was what impact do you think Mickey Arthur has had on your personal game? Just how integral has his influence been?
I think Mickey's come in with a strong plan straight away. And the first thing he did the first day that he came into training was sat us all down and had a just a chat with us all about what we needed to do as a team and as individuals to correct what happened last year and make this season a lot better. And a lot of it was about mindset, about more the mental side of the game. Because he personally had said he'd watched a lot of footage when he'd signed for us from last year, and couldn't put one and one together of how people's techniques and everything had failed everyone last year. So he came in with a strong objective of changing mindsets and belief of players that they were good enough and making everyone believe that they were good enough to be here, and the work that we'd done in the winter and that was perfect. We were all doing the right preparation. It was just about getting in the right headspace to go out there on the park when the pressure's on and being able to do the job. So I think that's the one thing that I've taken from Mickey so far, is how strongly he believes in players and puts his backing in them and makes people believe that they're good enough. There's not necessarily been from this time now to the start of last season, technically there's not a lot of differences in players, but that particular mindset and that almost positivity of players and that belief, I'd say, is the big difference that he's brought into our squad and our club.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, actually, because we do like the psychological area of the game of cricket, it's absolutely fascinating, isn't it? Just how important the mental aspects of the game actually are in terms of success in the game of cricket. What changes have been implemented on both a personal and a club scale in order to improve that facet of your game?
I don't think it's anything drastic. I think it's just more them conversations and them just them beliefs and them values that we put together as a squad, that we want, how we want to be seen as a club. We want to be seen as a tough team to beat. As obviously everyone's seen Mickey's press conference that he did a couple of weeks ago, where he said, his famous quote was, "We're going to be a team that's tough to beat before we can become a team that's going to win games." And that real, like I say, them values, and one of our key values is being tough and being brave. So going out there onto the park and being that tough team, being them players that want to be put in tricky situations, that want to get through them tricky situations. And as you've seen with the batting this year, obviously pitches have maybe been slightly better due to good weather this season, but people have stuck in. They haven't just made easy runs. People have made tough runs this year. And a lot of that's come from that mindset of just getting stuck in and wanting to be that player that wins games and changes games for the club and team.
Absolutely. And I think a big part of that has been a certain Shamasu, just the 713 runs in Division 2 in April at an average of 118. So he's not had a bad start to life at Derbyshire whatsoever. I just want to ask, to be honest, Brooke, how big of a lift has his signing been? Because I think we all thought that Shamasu would come into county cricket and excel. You know, he's an international quality opener. He's done it for Pakistan. He's done it in first-class cricket many a time before. But I don't think anybody expected him to be quite this dominant. Just how big of an impact has he had on those positivity levels, the confidence, the rhythm of this Derbyshire outfit?
Yeah, obviously his batting speaks for itself. And obviously he's been phenomenal so far, two double hundreds and only one score under 50, which was 42, I think, on the weekend. So he's obviously had a phenomenal start with the bat. But he also brings a lot of positivity and calmness. He speaks so well. And especially to the younger players in the change room, he gets messages across really well about batting and just how we can complicate the game so much by overthinking about it. So I think the way that he's come in and spoke about it has helped a lot of players in terms of dealing with situations, like we said before. And Mickey made it quite open to us when he first signed, and when obviously we'd heard that Sean had signed for us, that he was the type of player that Mickey wanted on board. It wasn't just because of what he could do with the bat, but the type of person he was as well, that could come in and knew his game, but could also help everyone else around him. And obviously the amount of runs he scored so far is phenomenal, but being out there and being able to bat with him at times and just how calm he is out in the middle makes you feel a lot more confident, like you say, and positive about situations. Obviously we've watched him bat in situations and he's made it look like bowlers are bowling at 50 mile an hour and at the other end we could be playing and missing in that. But just the way he speaks about it and how calm he stays has brought that positivity into the change room as well. And we've obviously been really lucky as well with obviously signing Saranga Lakmal as well, who's obviously a international quality bowler, obviously only just retired from international cricket. Obviously hasn't had quite the same start as Sean in terms of results, but again, he speaks really clearly and has helped the bowling attack out so far this season. And Mickey spoke obviously a lot about controlling run rates. That's his big thing when we're bowling. Maybe Saranga hasn't got as many wickets as he'd like so far, but his economy rate's unbelievable so far. So the two players that he brought in this season have been phenomenal.
They have indeed. I mean, it is absolutely fantastic as well. And it really is a testament to the recruitments at Derbyshire this summer. They've been absolutely fantastic. I know, obviously, Masood's been just levels above everyone, to be honest, in county cricket at the moment. But even Saranga, he's getting into some rhythm now, isn't he? After that first game, took a fifer over the weekend as well. So two really, really shrewd and smart pieces of business from the East Midlands County, to say the very least. And this next question isn't as serious, but again, it is about one of your teammates at the Inkora Ground. This is from Uncle Dens. And his question for you, Brooke, is what's it like being in the team with the greatest moustache this side of Brisbane? He is, of course, referring to a certain George Scrimshaw.
Yeah, Scrimmy's he's earned himself the nickname Tash for his famous, shall we say, moustache that he brought in last year during the T20 competition. And he said that it will be coming back for this year's T20 competition as well. So be on the lookout.
Oh, a TCCP exclusive. That's good to know, to be fair. We had him on the podcast, funny enough, and I'll never, ever forget this episode, to be honest, because before this appearance, I think he'd taken about 2 wickets or so in his first couple of games. The economy rate was in the 9s. And then all of a sudden, we have him on the podcast. The very next game was the Warwickshire game, which Derbyshire actually went on to win. It was their first win at Edgbaston since 2011 in the T20 competition. But in the next 3 games, he went and took 10 wickets with like an economy rate of 7. I could not believe it. So yeah, we need the moustache back, obviously, for any Derbyshire fans out there. And that's good to know, Brooke. Very reassuring that the Tash will be back in 2022. And in terms of this next question, this is from Chris Page. This is about club cricket, which is quite interesting. Sale versus Timperley. For those who don't know, Timperley, another former team for yourself, Brooke, based in Altrincham, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
We know our stuff here on the Counter Cricket Podcast. But he mentions about those being your two former clubs. Brooke, who are you supporting in this clash of the Titans?
Well, they are playing this weekend. And I can't side with either. Hopefully cricket's the winner. they've both been great clubs for me in the past 5 years. Obviously, I spent 2 years at Sale and then 3 years at Timperley, and they've both been great clubs for me. And they've both done a hell of a lot for me. So I can't pick between the two, sorry.
Hey, fair enough. A very diplomatic answer, to say the least. Cricket's the winner. I wasn't expecting that. I thought you were going to say, like, oh, I hope it rains or I hope it's a draw. Cricket's the winner. Brilliant. What a phrase that is for today's podcast. And in terms of our final Twitter question for this week, before we go on to the teammate segments, this comes from Stephen Mann. Again, Stephen always brings some fantastic questions for us here at the Counter Cricket Podcast. And Stephen asks, how difficult is it to be in the dirt for 100, 110 overs and then have 10 minutes to pad up and be ready to go if a wicket falls? How difficult is that for you, Brooke, as a keeper who bats at number 3?
Yeah, obviously it can be difficult at times. Obviously the concentration is obviously the key factor in that, being able to concentrate for every ball when you're keeping, and then all of a sudden you could be batting in the first over. So like you say, it is very difficult at times, but it's the toughest thing in cricket is knowing when to be able to switch off. And that sometimes has to be between balls, because like you say, if you're keeping for 110 overs and then all of a sudden you're batting in the first 5 overs between balls, yes, you've got to obviously know what's going on in that, but switching off mentally, that concentration between balls becomes so crucial to make sure when that bowler is running in, or when that catch comes or whatever, you've got to be obviously ready for it. So that it can be very challenging, but that's the hardest way of dealing with it, is knowing when to switch off and being able to do it well. But yes, it is. It can be very challenging at times.
Oh, I can imagine it can be. And I think the world of wicketkeepers, the Wicketkeepers Union, has Adam Gilchrist to blame for that. He was the one who kind of revolutionised the top order wicketkeeper batter. But that must not just be quite obviously mentally challenging, as you mentioned. The lack of being able to switch off at times must be quite discerning out in the middle, but also physically. Because when you have been, especially as a keeper, because you're essentially squatting for, what, 600 balls? It's an awful lot. It's a long time in the field. How on earth do you, you know, cope with the physically taxing nature of it as well? Does that ever present an issue, or has the body just got used to it over the years?
I think, like you say, the body does get more used to it. Obviously, it's never 100%. But like you say, that's why we do a lot of our gym work, our conditioning work, is to prepare ourselves for these situations. And like you say, we're always going to have days where we're sore, we're a bit tired, a bit stiff in muscles and that. but it's part of the job. It's part of what we do. And that's why we have these intense winter training sessions to get ready for these days when things like that do happen. So like you say, it's all about the preparation for dealing with situations like that.
100%. Very nicely articulated there, Brooke. To be honest, and before we move on to our teammate segment, I can't believe I didn't actually talk about this earlier, because I'm a bit of a badger when it comes to keeping. I'm not a keeper myself, unfortunately, but I do have a great fascination when it comes to the art form. What has made you keep on coming back all of these years to wicketkeeping? You know, why have you not become a seamer or just a specialist opener? What was it about wicketkeeping as an art which brought Brooke Guest back time and time and time again?
I think there's obviously a couple of things. Obviously, the first one is being that person that's involved all the time, and being anything could happen, any ball. You could get a stumping, you could get a run out, you could get a catch, you could get anything, any ball. You're diving around. It's for me, some people would argue not, but for me, it's quite enjoyable being that person that's involved in doing the hard work that rarely gets noticed. And it's one of them things that when you have a bad day, you get noticed more than when you have a good day. But it is that being able to take that catch or that stumping or whatever to change the game, and being involved all the time, that keeps, like you say, that keeps bringing me back to it.
I like that answer. Again, we do get that answer quite a lot on the podcast. Michael Burgess said something very similar. Tom Cullen from Glamorgan as well, as did David Nash and Ben Scott, both former Middlesex keepers. It is that, as you said, the element of being involved all the time. Of course, that does come with a certain pressure, a certain responsibility. I know that from being a goalkeeper in football. If you do make a mistake, the spotlight is well and truly on you in that moment. But at the same time, it's incredibly rewarding, isn't it? I suppose when you're involved every single ball, it's that ability to almost single-handedly change the course of a game. And if that, of course, does pay off, yeah, you get the accolades, you become the hero on the day, I suppose. And just one final thing about keeping, Brooke, in terms of your personal attitude towards it, are you much of a sledger behind the stumps? Are you a bit chirpy or not?
No, I'm more of an encourager. Not as big of a sledger as a lot of keepers can be. But no, I remember Mickey saying when we were playing against Leicester, obviously I was keeping, we had Alex Thompson at first slip and Wayne Madsen at second slip. And he went, I think we've probably got the nicest people in the slips out of any team that I've ever coached before.
Yeah, that does seem like a very, very friendly, very nice, very welcoming cordon. Alex Thompson, by the way, what a lad he is. He's absolutely fantastic. The former PE teacher, used to play for Staffordshire, Cardiff MCCU. Obviously, I know him from his time down here in Warwickshire. What a guy. I'm glad to see him doing well, to be honest. And fingers crossed we can get him on the podcast for a chat one day. But that's interesting to know, because you do fall into one of two camps, don't you? You've either got quite a chirpy, energetic slip cordon full of sledgers, or you've got the opposite, you know, a bit quiet, a bit more reserved, but always in the game, I suppose. So fair enough. Again, each their own when it comes to the art of wicketkeeping. And that is the beauty of the game of cricket. You can play it however you like, to be honest. Brooke, I mean, we've basically done the main content there, actually, for today's episode. That does just leave us with one final segment, which is, of course, TCCP teammates, a personal favourite segment of mine here on the podcast. We usually get some absolutely hilarious responses to this. We've learned all sorts about the characters in and around the county circuit. But for those who don't know what this segment entails, basically, I've got a quick assortment of questions for Brooke Guest to answer about all of the teammates that he shares a dressing room with at the Incora Ground in Derby. So, Brooke, are you ready for TCCP teammates?
Let's do it.
Fantastic. Well, we get off to a very strong start here on today's episode of TCCP. Brooke, who is the teacher's pet at Derbyshire who is always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Good question. I'd say Shah Masood at the minute. He's obviously been with Mickey for a while, obviously at Pakistan and that. And they have a good banter between the two of them, and they hang out a fair bit.
Fair enough. I'm going to be honest. I wasn't actually thinking that. But then that does make a lot of sense, to be fair, with Shamasu, because there is the Mickey Arthur connection. Same with Saranga Lakmal. Has he been in the good books as well?
Yeah, obviously Saranga's English isn't quite as good, so he's a bit more to himself, but he does have that strong relationship with Mickey as well.
Fantastic. That is what we like to hear, to be honest, in any cricketing environment. And moving on to our next question then, Brooke. Who is the dressing room DJ at the Ankora grounds, and what are their choices of tunes?
At the minute, Ajmal Shahzad, obviously our bowling coach, is he's the first man in every morning and likes to get his music on before anyone turns up. And he's all right. He's a bit same. Every morning it seems to be the same playlist. So after a month and a half of hearing the same songs, it does get a bit repetitive. But his music choice isn't too bad. It's nice and varied. In terms of a bit of old school, a bit of new school. So it's okay.
Go on, what are some examples of the songs that you've heard, obviously, quite a few times, I'm guessing, in the last month?
His favorite song is obviously I can't think what it's called now, the Elton John remix of Rocket Man. I can't think what the song's actually called. But every morning that song is on.
Is it the one with Dua Lipa?
Yeah, that's the one.
All
That's the
right.
one. He plays it every morning. It's one of the first songs we hear every morning that we come in. And it's a song that Mickey Arthur's got stuck in his head and sings to us every morning.
That'd be quite entertaining to have a fly on the wall to watch that, to be fair. Is he a good singer, Mickey Arthur?
He's head coach, so I'm not going to comment.
Yeah, probably a sensible decision there, to be honest, Brooke. So, with that revelation brought upon us then, let's move on to the next question. And this is a relatively new one here on the podcast, to be fair. But who has the strangest pre-game ritual in the Derbyshire dressing room? Does anybody do anything a little bit outside of the box and orthodox before they go out to bat or bowl or field? Does anyone have those, I don't know, quite strange lateral thinking pre-game rituals?
It's a good question. I haven't really thought about it before, and I'm thinking now, but I don't think anyone, the only one that you could say is slightly different is obviously Lias De Ploy. He's a big juggler before he goes out to bat. It's quite impressive. He can juggle four balls at the same time. So that's quite impressive. That's his sort of pre-batting ritual. He makes sure the 12th man gets in four balls before when he's next in. And he sits there, and every 10, 15 minutes, he'll get up and juggle four balls for a couple of minutes while he's, I suppose that's his way of getting his eye in, sort of.
We've heard that before on the podcast a couple of occasions, and still to this day, I can't quite think whether or not I've ever heard that before in a dressing room, other than Lias De Ploy, because I've seen beforehand Glenn Phillips does a visualization exercise where he gets a cricket ball and he puts it close to his face and then out and in and out and in and out to, I suppose, increase his depth perception and get his eye in before going out to bat. But Lias juggles.
Yeah.
It is a little bit unorthodox, that, isn't it? I suppose for you guys, it's quite normal now because you see it on a regular basis. But as an outsider,
Yeah.
it's a little bit rogue.
I suppose it gets his hand-eye coordination going, and that's just what he's done. I remember him telling me this week actually that one of his school coaches used to be able to juggle and that, and he sort of learnt off him. And ever since he's done it before he's gone out to bat. So, and obviously he's a very good player, so it's obviously worked for him.
Well, exactly. Yes, some very handy advice to take away from today's podcast. If it isn't broke, don't fix it. So, yeah, Lias, continue juggling. Never thought I'd say that sentence here on the podcast, but yeah, clearly is working out for him in both South Africa and, of course, here on the shores of the UK. And Brooke, moving on to our next one, this is an interesting one, always throws up some very funny answers. And I think actually we may have mentioned the person who relates to this particular topic, but who's the most likely to get timed out in the middle of a game?
Definitely George Crimshaw.
There it is.
there was a situation last year where I'm sure everyone remembers it, in the T20 against Notts at the Incora. And he was batting at 11, and it ended up being a very tense game. We needed five off the last ball to win. But George came in with about an over and a half to spare, and I was sat downstairs in the dugout, and the ninth wicket had just fallen. I'm like, right, okay, come on, George, get out there, get a few runs, get Matt Critchie was batting with him, get him on strike. And 20 seconds passed and he hadn't appeared. And we're all going, what's going on? 30 seconds go, still hadn't appeared. And we're like, he's going to get timed out here. Where is he? Next minute, we see him upstairs in the change room, rushing around, still padding up. How he didn't get timed out, I don't know. But later we found out that Wayne Madsen, who was obviously injured at the time, was helping him strap on his pads before that innings, because he was that far behind and really wasn't ready. So that was quite a funny situation. Well, a funny situation looking back at it now, but at the time it was the coach wasn't very happy with him.
I was going to say that'd be an absolutely horrendous way to lose a game of cricket, wouldn't it? With the last wicket being timed out. Not only that, for people who don't know the Incora, that's a surprisingly long distance, isn't it? From the dressing room to the outfield.
Well, it was even further last year, because we were up right at the top of the building, because obviously with COVID times, we had to have bigger dressing rooms with more space and that. So we were up another set of stairs as well last year. So it took a long time for him to get out there. It was definitely longer than 2 minutes, shall we say.
Oh, God. I mean, hopefully, fingers crossed, that does not happen in a game, because it's absolutely horrible. And I'm guessing, Brooke, that along with many other cricketers, you've had the dream, or the nightmare, I think we should call it, of not being able to get the pads on in time, not being able to get out into the middle.
Yeah. Oh. I think everyone's had that. Not knowing where your kit is, or being half asleep and not realising you're in next, and definitely a nightmare.
Absolutely. Oh, see, that whenever we talk about this, this always just rejogs my mind, actually. So a conversation we've had with some of the Northants boys, Charlie Thurston, and we need to get Charlie on the podcast. Charlie, if you're listening, get yourself on the Counter Cricket podcast. But his pre-game ritual, he does not put any of his pads on until he is next into bat. So he will not even have a thigh pad on as that wicket has fallen, and then he puts all of his gear on. It's absolutely insane. I'd be so nervous doing that. I don't think I could hack that personally.
No. And that brings up a story. Mickey's told us a story of obviously Jacques Callis, obviously a great player, but he used to be asleep until he was in. He'd get someone to wake him up when the wicket fell.
That's insane, isn't it?
Yeah. It's remarkable, and I, like you say, I could never do anything like that.
I might have to implement that into my game. I mean, Jacques, obviously the third leading test run scorer of all time. Maybe that was the key to success, you know. Nice and well rested. Again, though, it shows the individuality of cricket, doesn't it? I mean, Brooke, do you have any pre-game rituals before you go out to bat, or is it literally just pads on? I don't know, maybe say a word of encouragement to yourself and then walk out, or do you have any superstitions?
No, I'll sit there waiting to bat, and wicket falls, I walk out there and that's it. There's nothing, no secret, shall we say.
Fair enough. Very orthodox then. Absolutely nothing wrong with that at all, to be honest, Brooke. And in terms of our final question for today, this is always a classic here on the Counter Cricket podcast. But we're getting closer to that time of the year. Summer is fast approaching. In fact, we're now in May. As we record this episode, And in the UK, that means that we have a certain show on in the summer by the name of Love Island. So Brooke, my question to you to wrap up today's podcast is, who's the most likely in that Derbyshire dressing room to appear on Love Island?
Have to be Sam Connors.
He'd be good value.
He's the one that's always watching it and loves the show. And I think, it'd be good comedy value if he went on there.
Fair enough, Sam, if you're listening, get yourself on. Obviously not during the season, you have to do it after he retires, which will be many, many a year in the future. But that would be entertaining, wouldn't it, watching Sam Connors, watching any county cricketer on Love Island, to be honest. I mean, I can't see many people, you know, doing that well, to be honest, but who knows? Someone might go on, they might succeed our expectations, and who knows, win the thing. We'll have to wait and see. To be honest, who knows? It could be Sam Connors. It could be Sam Connors for all we know. So, again, Sam, get your representatives in contact with the people at ITV. But, Brooke, before we say our final goodbyes for today's episode, a very fascinating episode of the County Cricket Podcast, it does have to be said. Just one final question from me, and quite a profound one. What are your future aspirations in the game? From both an individual and from a team perspective, what do you want to achieve heading into the rest of the summer of 2022 and the years that follow?
Yeah, obviously a team goal for this year is obviously to try and get promoted. That's one thing we've set ourselves out to do this year. Well, in the next 2 years, we want to get promoted up into Division One. And we want to be competitive in both the white ball competitions, pushing for finals in both of them. Obviously, on a more personal level, I obviously had an appraisal before the season started, and my big thing was making that number three position my own. In Red Bull cricket, making that my position, and obviously making sure that I'm the number one keeper going forward for Derbyshire for the next few years, certainly. Obviously, the only keeper in the squad at the minute, so it's obviously my job at the minute, but making sure that it's my job in a few years' time by putting in performances and not making them need to sign someone else. And obviously, ultimately, I'm sure a lot of people say it's that playing for England is that dream. That dream's always for any cricketer, I'm guessing, is to play international cricket.
Well, Brooke, I think it goes without saying, to be honest, mate, but obviously myself and everyone here at the County Cricket Podcast are wishing both yourself and Derbyshire County Cricket Club all the best of luck heading into the rest of the summer of 2022 and beyond. We are big fans of what's going on at the Inkora Ground so far. Of course, you're a part of that with your performances so far this summer. I just can't wait, to be honest, to see how Derbyshire do across all three competitions. I think it's got the makings of a very, very enjoyable summer indeed. And of course, Derbyshire fans, if you are in the Derby area, you want to get yourself down, please, please do. Go to the Inkora Ground, support the team, buy some tickets, buy some merch, and support the 18 first-class counties. That's all I'll say. But Brooke, I think that is a lovely place to wrap up what's been an excellent episode of the County Cricket Podcast today. Just before we say our final goodbyes for the recording, mates, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, obviously I want to say a big thank you to M&H Cricket, who have been a Miller Champion Hall, who have been a big sponsor of me for the last few years. Obviously my kit sponsor. So definite big shout out to them. And obviously a big shout out to Derbyshire for obviously keeping me in contract and giving me a job.
Oh, what a way to end the podcast. Fair enough though, Brooke. Hey, it's fact at the end of the day. And of course, we'll be leaving the links to Derbyshire's websites and of course your social medias, Brooke. It is just custom here on the podcast, to be honest. We'll leave the Twitter, possibly the Instagram as well. We'll see which one comes up first in the old Google algorithms and we'll use whichever one suits best. But of course, listeners, if you want to go and check out Brooke's social media, you can do so by checking out those links below. But that is it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for today's episode. To all of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.